For love loves unto purity. Therefore, all that is not beautiful in the beloved, all that comes between and is not of love's kind, must be destroyed. And our God is a consuming fire. This is Pints with Jack, Season 7, Episode 37. McDonald Month. Reading George. After Hours with Jess Lederman. Welcome everyone. Here on Pints with Jack, we're reading our way through the works of C.S. Lewis. But this month, we've been looking at Lewis's self-confessed master, George MacDonald. We began this month by looking at his biographical details, and since then, I've been interviewing guests about George's life and thought. But today is the penultimate episode of MacDonald Month. Next episode, we're going to be discussing Lewis's anthology. So Lewis put together an anthology for George MacDonald, and I'll be discussing that with my co-host and a special guest. But what I'd really like to do in today's episode is to offer some guidance to listeners as to how they might proceed in diving into the works of George MacDonald. But since I don't know MacDonald that well, my advice would be pretty limited. Fortunately, I'm joined today by someone who does know MacDonald very well, Mr. Jess Lederman. Jess Lederman is a graduate of Columbia University. He and his late wife Terry came to faith in Christ through the works of C.S. Lewis and George MacDonald. He writes Christian-themed literary fiction and recently completed The Ballad of Midnight and McRae, a novel that begins in the last days of the Wild West and ends in Las Vegas in 1955. He's the publisher of numerous new editions of MacDonald's fiction and non-fiction. He's also the editor of Consuming Fire, The Inexorable Power of God's Love, the devotional version of MacDonald's Unspoken Sermons. That influenced my selection for today's opening quotation. And he is an integral part of the team behind worksofmacdonald.com. When he's not writing or chasing his young sons around, he can usually be found at the piano playing Chopin nocturnes for his wife, Ling. Jess Lederman, welcome to Pints with Jack.
Thanks, David. I am delighted to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you here. As I was telling you before we hit record, I'd been looking at our George MacDonald month, and I hadn't been quite happy with the way that it was ending. I felt like we really needed a launch pad, a plan for people who this month have hopefully learned a little bit more about George MacDonald, been intrigued by this man, and want to dive into his works. I really wanted to answer the question, how do you begin? How do you proceed? How do you start diving into this guy? And then I heard you on a recent episode of the relatively new George MacDonald podcast, Making Friends with George MacDonald, and I immediately sent you an email. I thought, this is the guy. This is the one who's going to help us explain where do we go from here.
Well, thanks. I'm always delighted to be able to talk about George MacDonald, particularly with people who are new to him. And that podcast that you listened to from some of my friends who are part of the George MacDonald Society, and they do a good job. But yeah, I'm sort of a MacDonald apostle.
Wonderful.
Should be fun today.
Absolutely. Well, today I'm drinking some chrysanthemum tea. Are you drinking anything?
I am. I'm drinking organic lemon balm tea. That's B-A-L-M, not B-O-M-B, in case you're worried about that. But there you go.
I love it. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
So let's begin with a little bit of background. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about yourself and how you discovered C.S. Lewis and George MacDonald?
Sure. Well, at the time that I discovered the duo of C.S. Lewis and his master George MacDonald, I came to them as a evangelical atheist. I was, a very self-satisfied atheist, for that matter. My wife, also an atheist at the time, listened to an interview with an eminent scientist, Francis Collins, on the radio in 2006. And he had just published a book called The Language of God. It was about two things. One, he was head of the team that was decoding the human genome some 20 years ago. It's about that, fascinating in its own right, but also about his personal journey. He had started out as an atheist and came to Christ partly through just the science he was doing to looking at the human biology, but also, and more powerfully, through the writings of C.S. Lewis. And Collins, a very humble guy, so rather than reinvent the wheel, he quoted extensively from Lewis. Well, my wife and I both read this book, and we were very impressed, but also extremely impressed with what we read of Lewis. And we said, well, you know, this Lewis guy, he sounds pretty interesting. Let's buy a whole bunch of his books and read them, which we did. And you can't get too far into the works of C.S. Lewis without coming across the reference to George MacDonald, of course. And when it became clear that Lewis attributed so much of his journey, which similarly was one from atheism to belief, to MacDonald, and how deeply MacDonald influenced him, that we thought, well, okay, we better read this MacDonald fellow. And we saw, okay, he had written some 50-odd books, and we ordered all of them, and we dug in.
Wow.
And it was it was this double team of C.S. Lewis and George MacDonald. And this is a gross simplification, but there's some truth to it, which is that Lewis, to some extent, was sort of the intellect. You know, he in Mere Christianity, for example, he builds this powerful case for God and then progresses along to, okay, you know, the Christian God. MacDonald, also a powerful intellect, but his was really the heart. It was, you know, his passionate belief in the Father heart of God. I had been an atheist in large part due to exposure to exactly the same sort of, you know, mostly sort of Reformed Calvinist type of portrayals of God that MacDonald abhorred. So finding this passionate Christian who was against everything that I thought made no sense and yet believed in God, well, that combined with Lewis's sort of intellectual command, that did the trick. And really, you know, it's coming up on 20 years now that I have been a Christian.
Wow. So that's quite a way to dive into a new author by ordering all of their books. You're now one of the people involved in worksofmacdonald.com, that website. You've helped bring many new editions of MacDonald's books to print. There's fan level, but this is something beyond that. So what was it that took you to the next stage?
Yeah, I felt compelled to do that, and maybe for a couple of reasons. One was a deep sense of gratitude, as you can imagine, for having been brought to Christ, brought to belief by these men. But Lewis, of course, is already very, very, very well known. He also, even though his when you really dig into Lewis's theology, it's quite a bit at odds with much of certainly in the United States, you know, Reformed Christian thinking, but he gets a pass, right? He's highly esteemed. People just sort of look over, okay, it's a sort of an eccentric view that Lewis has of this, that, or the other thing. They ignore it. MacDonald, much, much less well known than Lewis. And part of that, of course, is because Lewis is far more modern. You know, he's a 20th century writer. MacDonald is very much a Victorian style writer. So some people, you know, it's a challenge, the Victorian language that he used both in his nonfiction and his fiction. And he does not get a pass for much of mainstream or particularly Reformed Christian circles. So I thought, boy, I really wanted to do something out of gratitude to bring MacDonald to more people. The website was obviously a big part of that. Creating new editions of his works, a big part of that, because I wanted to include, particularly for some of the more challenging works, introductory front matter, introductory material that by experts that would provide insight for people. And another part, increasingly, something else that motivated me was to provide a creative outlet for the community of George MacDonald enthusiasts. So as we'll talk about later, the website has a lot more on it than just, you know, biography and information about what books MacDonald put out, but also features music and art and works inspired by MacDonald. So all those things kind of came together.
Well, let's talk about the website then. Because when I discovered it, my reaction was, this is what I've been trying to build Pints of the Jack to be as well. The idea of collecting together all of the information that's out there, all of the different resources. And I actually think you guys have done a far, far better job than I have thus far of getting community involvement. So, worksofmcdonald.com. Can you just tell us a little bit about it, how it started, who's involved, and most importantly, what resources are available there?
Sure. So this got started around 2015, 2016. It was right after I published the devotional version of McDonald's Unspoken Sermon. So that's Consuming Fire, the Inexorable Power of God's Love. I wanted to make his tremendous theological opus more accessible to people. And then went beyond that and decided, okay, I'm going to also start this this website. And while I'm the sort of primary unifying force behind it, it incorporates material from a very wide range of people who are part of the George MacDonald community, particularly the George MacDonald Society. It's a little bit like, imagine you have an eccentric uncle who is an explorer. And when you go to visit him, he lives in a Victorian mansion where there are all sorts of odd passageways, and you might go down one dark passageway, a hallway, and open up a door, and all of a sudden you find a room filled with all sorts of interesting and amazing things. And this website is probably not the most well-organized website in the world, but it's a little bit like that eccentric uncle's Victorian mansion. It's got, I think, a pretty amazing variety of materials. So as you can imagine, in a website devoted to George MacDonald, it includes copious information just about MacDonald, biographical information, photographs, overviews of the various genres, written by with essays by some of the most prominent MacDonald experts that there are, Michael Phillips, Barbara Amell, and others. It has many pages that are individual pages devoted to not all, but many of MacDonald's books. And on those pages, for example, people can find recommended editions. MacDonald's works, coming from the 19th century, are all in the public domain. Well, whenever that's true, I can't wait till this happens with Lewis one day, you get 1,001 knockoff editions, right? And many of them are pretty horrible and missing, important punctuation and whatnot. So how do you know what's a good edition? And so we recommend various editions, and we have links to both scholarly and other articles, essays about the work in question, in some cases links to videos and whatnot. So lots and lots of information for somebody who's digging into particular works, as well as overviews of the various genres of work. And then we go beyond that into a lot of the material where I talked about creative outlet for the George MacDonald community. So for example, under our regular features, we have a blog called Pictures, Poems, and Song. Well, MacDonald has inspired not a few musicians, myself included, to set his works to music. And in fact, there have been not that, just a few years ago in London, I believe, there was a musical version of his Light Princess. In particular, his fantasy works in particular have inspired quite a bit of music. But also paintings, also other books that have been inspired by MacDonald. We have, I'm just looking at the drop-down menu under regular features, C.S. Lewis, the roots of his famous quotes in the works of George MacDonald. We have influences on MacDonald, books that I think are in the spirit of George MacDonald. A lot of personal journey stories in a blog called MacDonald and Me. Could have been MacDonald and I suppose, which is just about how did people discover George MacDonald and what's been the influence on his or her life. Prayers drawn from his works, profiles of vintage editions of MacDonald's work. So and on. So that but just gives you sort of a flavor of both what you would expect to find in a website like this, and maybe a little bit of what might be perhaps a bit surprising.
Well, I absolutely love it. I am hoping to steal some of those ideas for Pints with Jack in the near future. But your point about C.S. Lewis and George MacDonald, how Lewis is the better known one and MacDonald less so, that was actually really what prompted this MacDonald month. Last season, we had a one-off episode with Dr. Kirsten Jeffrey Johnson about MacDonald because I realized that it was some kind of sin that we'd gone this many seasons and not done anything on MacDonald. And at the end of the recording, I promised her that this season we would do some more, hence MacDonald month. And honestly, the more I read about what Lewis said about George MacDonald makes me think that if I am really trying to honor the legacy of C.S. Lewis with Pints with Jack, we need to have more MacDonald on this podcast with a little bit more regularity. You mentioned the section of the website where it talks about the things that C.S. Lewis drew upon from MacDonald. That list seems pretty endless. There's a few people who I see online. Whenever someone posts a C.S. Lewis quotation, they immediately follow it up with a post from George MacDonald showing what Lewis is drawing upon. And yes, I'm looking at you, David Jack. So in order to help make MacDonald better known, we're going to talk about how to begin reading him. And I think it would be a good idea, first of all, just to sketch out his corpus a little bit. We've done this a few times this month, but I'd just like you to outline what are the key genres that he works in, and what are the major pieces that are recognized by MacDonald fans as his most important works.
So probably half a dozen genres, depending how closely you want to divide them. Nonfiction, all right? Nonfiction, you could divide that between his theological works and then the much less well-known works of literary criticism. So in his theological works, you know, someone wants to say, what exactly, I have a sense of MacDonald's theology from his fiction, but, you know, what exactly did he believe? Well, there are really three great works, and the most well-known, most important would be his massive three-volume Unspoken Sermons. And that's what I had created a devotional version of in the book called Consuming Fire. I think someone who dives into that will then be well prepared to understand what they're going to encounter in much of his fiction. But so nonfiction, theological works, and as I said, there's some literary criticism as well. Turning to away from nonfiction, his fiction could be divided into his fantasy works and his so-called realistic fiction, although I hear G.K. Chesterton in the background telling me, really, there's no difference between the two. Okay, G.K., that's fine. So his fantasy works, it might break into the ones that would be considered quote-unquote children's, the fantasy stories, although there's nothing that MacDonald wrote that isn't for, you know, for adults, even if it's can be read by children as well. And then the two works that bookend his career, sort of the adult fantasy works. MacDonald is known as the godfather of modern fantasy fiction, and probably for those two works, one at the very beginning of his career, Phantastes, and then at the very end of his career, Lilith. These are major works of fiction. For the fantasy works are, however, the lighter fantasy works are probably his best known, best loved works, such as The Light Princess, that, as I mentioned, was just not that long ago turned into a musical. The Princess and Curdy, The Princess and the Goblin, At the Back of the North Wind. And then his shorter stories, his anthologies of fairy tales, The Golden Key, The Day Boy and the Night Girl, also, I think, turned into a musical. That sort of completes all of the fantasy fiction, adult, children's, and the fairy tale stories. The realistic, so-called realistic fiction, breaks into two categories. One would be the so-called Scottish novels. These not only take place in Scotland, but typically feature significant numbers of pages that are written, or of dialogue, written in the Scottish here we get into an argument, dialect or language, depending on, if I said dialect, I'd have some Scotsman who would come after me with a serious weapon, probably.
I claim more.
The English novels, which typically are just straight English, as long as you can deal with Victorian prose, you can deal with them as well. Although the Scottish novels, I'll say one of the things that we did in publishing new editions of George MacDonald is to create what we called Scots English editions that put side by side the original Scots text and English translations. And then finally, rounding out the genres, you'd have some volumes, a couple of volumes of poetry that George MacDonald wrote.
Wonderful.
There's an overview for you. If I have to mention prominent works of the Scottish novels, the two probably best known, Robert Falconer and Sir Gibbie. On the English novels, Thomas Wingfold would be one of the most prominent ones. A Scottish novel that was written in pretty much in straight English is What's a Mind's Mine. Perhaps of all the novels, the so-called realistic fiction, probably my favorite.
Okay, that was actually a question I was going to sneak in at the end, so I'm glad we got an answer to that already. So let's go to the main question of this interview. Someone wants to get into MacDonald. Where do they begin? How do they proceed? And also, what should they definitely not do? So my example for this is when people first hear about G.K. Chesterton, when they hear a Chesterton fan raving about him, they usually go out and get either The Everlasting Man or Orthodoxy. And I think both of those are terrible ideas. Not because the works aren't good, the works are very good. I just wouldn't recommend them as the place to begin. So, what would you say for MacDonald?
I know that some people have been can get really intimidated by the two so-called adult fantasy novels, Phantastes and Lilith. They're both complex, challenging works, so probably not the best to start with. Where you'd start really depends, I think, on where someone is coming from, what genres they prefer. So let's say somebody has a particular theological bent. Right. Then I would say, well, you might begin with the nonfiction. And if the sheer bulk of Unspoken Sermons, three volumes, is intimidating, that's where my I didn't change any of MacDonald's Victorian styling. It is what it is, his language. But I cut about half the word count because I, like many Victorian writers, why say something in 10 words if you can say it in 20 or 30, right? So So it wasn't too hard to cut the word count by half and really not lose anything. Although I'm the first one to say, go for the original full Unspoken Sermons if somebody is up for it. But if someone is coming at this first from more of a nonfiction point of view, that's where I would begin with Unspoken Sermons or with my devotional version of it, 365 pages, basically. In addition, with a good introduction, I provided, for example, in Consuming Fire, an introduction that explains how I think of the major themes that run throughout Unspoken Sermons. We also have an edition of the full Unspoken Sermons that contains a very substantial introduction that does much the same thing. So, you know, get an edition that has a thoughtful introduction, because I think that's going to be a big help. And again, there are so many knockoff editions, and 99% of them have no front matter, no introductions at all. On the other hand, if somebody is coming at this first of all from a love of fiction, then it's a question of do you have a predisposition more toward fantasy? Or toward, I'm using realistic fiction simply because so many people divide MacDonald's works like that. Although I think Chesterton has a good point when he says, really, there's not that big a difference between his fantasy works and his realistic fiction. Within that realistic fiction, you've got dragons and monsters and knights in shining armor, symbolically, so to speak. And I would also say that you're going to end up understanding and absorbing MacDonald's theological perspective, regardless whether you start with his fiction, whether it's fantasy or whether it's his so-called realistic fiction, or whether you start with his nonfiction, because everything he wrote, and he gets criticism for this sometimes, is in some ways a sermon. it's arguably a weak point of some of his writing, is that that sermonizing can come across as heavy-handed. But for those of us who love him, the fact that that he's writing about such important fundamental themes as of, you know, the Father heart of God, the meanings of justice, the meaning of the nature of God being love. God is love. The working out of those themes is done both through his sermons and his nonfiction, as well as in his fantasies and his realistic fiction.
What, for example, would you say are some of his key works not to miss? And if What's Mine is Mine is your favorite, could you give me your elevator pitch for it?
Well, I would for sure read Thomas Wingfold, Curate, as well as What's Mine's Mine, because I think Thomas Wingfold, very interesting. You have a story of a young man who has gone into the church because, you know, this is, we're talking about the mid 1800s, and it's a dependable living, right? You can, his uncle had been a curate, and you make a salary and read some sermons. He's actually using his uncle's sermons, and he's never thought too much about God or about his faith, but he gets up there and he gives his sermons and earns his paycheck. And then one day, everything is challenged. He has to come to terms with, does he even believe? Who is this God? Who is this Christ that he says he believes in? And so this Wingfold's journey is dramatic and fascinating, and you learn through that journey the way MacDonald himself thinks of Christ and thinks of God. Paul Young, who wrote famous for writing The Shack, has a quote from in another one of his books where he says, "Knowing the character of God is essential." George MacDonald believed in that with all his heart, because everything, all of his understanding of Scripture, of God, is based on his understanding of the Father heart of God as that revealed in Christ. And I think you learn about that through any one of a number of his books, but I think in his realistic fiction, Thomas Wingfold, and then What's Mine's Mine, which takes place in the Scottish Highlands, combine, in particular in What's Mine's Mine, you have both a dramatic story, one of the better written stories. You know, Lewis kind of famously deprecated MacDonald's writing ability. He said, look, MacDonald is totally inspired and influenced Lewis, but maybe he wasn't such a good novelist. And there are legitimate criticisms of MacDonald's writing, but many of us think it's a bit better than Lewis put it. And What's Mine's Mine is certainly, and I think Thomas Wingfold also, are two of the best written novels of MacDonald's. In the fantasies, while I wouldn't recommend it as the first one to read, I would say Lilith is absolutely the towering masterpiece. It's a wild fantasy. I mean, this is a story of multiple dimensions, and anyone who reads it will see just to what extent MacDonald influenced future fantasy writing. But also, particularly in the conclusion of the book, is just a very persuasive working out of the implications of his theology in a very very dramatic fashion. Of the lighter fantasy works, all of which have, you know, are filled with meaning and insights into how MacDonald thought about God, even if the word God never appears, I would say The Light Princess and the Curdy books, that Chesterton would be furious with me if I didn't strongly recommend that people read the two Curdy books, Princess and Curdy and Princess and the Goblin. For sure, you can't miss either the full three volumes of Unspoken Sermons, or else, if not, then the devotional version, Consuming Fire, is a pretty close second there. Those would be the don't miss works. And where you start in it really depends what your where are you coming from? What kind of fiction do you like the best? I think it'll be interesting for Lewis fans who may have come across MacDonald first, perhaps in The Great Divorce, right, where Lewis actually features George MacDonald as a character, right? He's his guide to heaven, or at least the you know, the gateway to heaven. And he puts a lot of words in McDonald's mouth that might give a innocent reader a very distorted sense of what McDonald actually believed, because the two were in sync on so many things. But where they parted company is in Lewis's belief that somebody who rejects God and continues to reject even post-mortem, ultimately you're at risk of losing your humanity entirely, right? And so you could be eternally separated from God. And McDonald saw that as both a sort of a logical and moral impossibility, that separation from God is such an extreme misery that everyone would ultimately turn to him. It'll be interesting for Lewis fans who have that as their only exposure to McDonald to come across more of his thinking. I think what Lewis was thinking was that, well, you know, George, now that he's, you know, in the third heaven or whatever, he's seen the light. And so, you know, when he's my tour guide to heaven, he'd be talking the way I think, because I'm right. But when the two of them finally met in, November of 1964, I suppose, right? They might have had a little conversation about that. We'll see.
Where should people go if they want to get McDonald as himself, rather than the Lewisian version? Where would you suggest they go? Unspoken Sermons?
Yeah. I think Unspoken Sermons, for sure, is the most thorough exposition of McDonald's thinking, and you'll see much that's right in sync with Lewis, and then some, obviously, as I've been saying, that is not.
Last season, we actually commissioned an audiobook of The Golden Key in preparation for this McDonald's month. And I wouldn't be surprised if we commission another book at some point. My McDonald reading over the next few months will probably decide exactly where we go. But one area I do want to dig into a little bit more before we wrap up this episode. Some people like to begin with poetry. So what are the collections of McDonald's poetry like? What does the landscape look like? Is there just a single collection, or are they spread across multiple books?
Interesting you ask that, because it's been in the back of my mind that we probably ought to put out some editions of his books. There are two I have on my bookshelf, all of his poems in two volumes that were published by Johannesson Publishing. They these are their hardcover. They stopped publishing McDonald a number of years ago, so I can't tell you off the top of my head if those volumes of two volumes of poetry are still available from them. It's Johannesson Publishing Company in California, but those are quite good. All of McDonald tends to be available online for free if you can deal with it. I've never checked to see if all the poems are there. I'm guessing they are. You know, Gutenberg, right? Online, certainly all the novels, the Unspoken Sermons are. So I'm guessing that many, if not all, of the poems are there as well. But the Johannesson Publishing two volumes hardback of McDonald's poetry are. I would recommend that.
And what if people want to read a biography about McDonald? What if they want to know a little bit more about the man himself, his surroundings, his family, and all that sort of stuff? Where should they go? Are there any particular ones which you'd recommend?
Sure. Well, there have been a number of biographies written about George McDonald. Michael Phillips has a very good one. He's the man who really brought about the renaissance in George McDonald probably about 40 years ago. Really, thanks to him, most of McDonald's works have been completely out of print before Michael Phillips. However, there's also a fascinating book called George McDonald and His Wife that was published 100 years ago by his son, Greville McDonald, who became a fairly prominent surgeon. And that's a wonderful book. You read about all kinds of things like the tour of the U.S. that McDonald made, where he was giving lectures on poets and on Shakespeare to standing room only crowds throughout the U.S. It was a different country back then, clearly.
And my wife wouldn't forgive me if I didn't point out that the introduction to that book is written by G.K. Chesterton. So if you need more encouragement to go and read McDonald on top of that, I don't know who to suggest. He's endorsed by Chesterton. He's endorsed by Lewis. That's basically everybody. And with that, we will wrap up. Jess Lederman, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Can you please tell people where they can go to find out more about you and your work?
Sure. Well, obviously, you have worksofmcdonald.com. That's most important. I'm also, as a novelist, you can find out more about me at jessletterman.com. So that's J-E-S-S as in Sierra, L-E-D as in Delta, E-R-M-A-N.com, jessletterman.com. That's the two major places.
That's great. Well, as I hear the landlord ring the bell for final drinks, I would like to offer some thanks. Thanks to our guests for coming on the show. Thanks to our audio engineers, Taylor and Sarah, our intern, Julia, and all of you for listening. All of those who support us on Patreon, particularly our top tier supporters, Mary Margaret, Aldo, Alex, James, Matt, Erica, Joelle, Amanda, Thomas, Bud 1, Bud 2, Shane, Kay, Paul, Gary, Stephen, Kelly, Chris, John, James, Kate, Peter, David, Angela, and Rowdy. We pray for you every week and whenever there's an episode released. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and maybe take your first steps into George MacDonald this week. And please join us again next time when we're going to be going through the George MacDonald anthology by C.S. Lewis. So please come back then when we'll continue going further up
and further in.
Cheers.
Cheers.